Africans at home and throughout the diaspora. Unity is strength. We've got the power.
Stop the fussing and the fighting. Now's the time to do the right thing.
We need more unity.
Cool.
Stop the fussing and the fighting.
Yeah.
Now's the time to do the right thing.
In the spirit of umoja, embrace with love.
Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right. Stop the fussing and the
right
fighting.
Right now, right now.
Now's the time to do the right thing. Let's do it right now. We've got to do it right.
Right now.
That's right. That's right. We are going to do it right. And the fussing and fighting, you know, that's part of the song. But I'm thinking during this election season in St. Louis, it's definitely appropriate. There is going to be an election on April 8th. And some of us are on opposing sides. But guess what? On April 9th, we're still going to be in St. Louis and we're still going to be in the same community. So let's be principled, let's be passionate, let's be humane to one another. We got opinions for sure. This is Jamala Rogers and I'm your host, Voices from the Battlefield, and we are here live at Harrisville State University with the Black Radio Hall of Fame family, and we say thank you to them. And there may be some comments and views that I say today that are not necessarily those of Harris Stowe or Black Radio Hall of Fame. You know, before I get really started, this is an open mic, and I'm hoping that my live streaming is working today. I haven't had to say this for almost 30 years. I had to say it when I first started writing for the St. Louis American because I was getting hate mail. And the hate mail did not come with return addresses. And so I just had to do a whole column on what I was and was not going to accept. And so there was a conscious decision when I started to write for the St. Louis American to use my name, my actual name, and my face. My face. Okay, my face, so that people would know who I am. And when people responded to something I was writing about, the hope was that they were principled and honest enough to send me a communication. Of course, this was before the internet, really, for real, with their name and address. And in some cases, if they had that, I would actually respond. But what I said in that first column is, I've got my face and name out there. This is public as it can be. But yet you're going to send me something hiding behind an anonymous letter. I'm not going to open them. So basically that shut down a lot of that stuff. And it was basically hate mail coming from white men. I could tell by the writing style. So recently I started to get some mail and they did not have return addresses on it. So here's the thing. There's a number of ways to do this. If you got some legitimate information and you just don't want your name associated with this, because this has happened too, where people might have sent me something from their workplace to say this might be something you want to write about. I am not an investigative reporter, so I don't have time to do the deep dive like maybe some of the reporters at other places used to do. That's what the Riverfront Times used to do well. Public radio does that well. So if you send me something, I have to be able to verify it. And if your name on there, then I can just call you and say, hey, tell me a little bit more about this. So that's happened sometimes where people will send me an anonymous thing. Then later they will call and say, that was me that sent that. I just didn't want my name attached to it. But when you send something with no, I'm just not going to, particularly now when, you know, people are very vicious, they are sending ugly things to the mail, but sometimes they may be sending something else in the mail when you open it. So there's a bit of paranoia here, and as the saying goes, just because you're paranoid does not mean somebody is not after you. So I'm just going to say that. I'm not opening up any mail that doesn't have a return address. Okay, so we just had an inspiring weekend, and I think I needed that coming into the last few days of this election. Bob Hansman and I, y'all know him as Birthday Bob, were able to spend some time with some students from Washington University. They are from the Global Citizenship class with Dr. Aaron Williams. And they went on a tour of St. Louis, some of the spots that, you know, black people at one point inhabited and now don't. And they got a good history of that. And when they came, finished the tour, they had lots of questions for me, Bob, and I'm blanking on the other sister who's like one of the mainstays in the VO. So these are just young people, like, you know, they looking at the world, trying to figure out what their place in it is going to be. And so it really is up to us as adults to make sure they understand the full complement of what's going on and what their role could be. I might be having some issues with sound here. Let me see. The Facebook audio is low. I don't know quite what to do about that. I guess you all just have to listen very intently or turn up your mics on your video. So these young people had, you know, plenty of questions about St. Louis and what was happening and what was not happening, why. And so, we responded to that. And one of the questions that really struck me was that one of the young people asked if we thought it was going to be violence in this country. And it was the kind of question I knew that young person already knew the answer to, but he wanted to get some validation, some affirmation based on what he was seeing. And so I said, absolutely. Absolutely, there's going to be violence. We're already starting to see it. And some of this is just basic encounters between black and white people. You see these, YouTubes and videos that are on social media where, you know, some white person thought they had the right to say something. And there's lots of Karens out there, but then there's also some Kens. So, you know, that's happening. But what you're going to start to see is when we start moving into the recession part of it, you know, we're already dealing with inflation. These people are dismantling, really, the government. And so some of the safeguards that we had when people really get in a pinch are not going to be there. So the economy is going to play a large role in our ability to cope and our ability to deal with conflict and stress. And generally what happens with people, this is a predictable human behavior, is that we take it out on the people closest to us. And it could be the people we love. So you're going to see domestic violence go up. You're going to see child abuse go up. You're going to, see a level of violence go up. Because when you push people in corners and you take away their basic tools that they normally would have to respond or to express themselves, then you're going to have some problems. One of the things that they're trying to take away is the ability to even protest. They want to criminalize that. So, again, you know, you're going to feel like you pressed up against the wall with no tools, no redress, and that's not going to be a good place. So, yes, there's going to be violence, no doubt about it. Also, just a note that the same people who are manipulating the economy, manipulating us, are the same people who made it very easy to have semi-automatic guns. So there you have it. There you have it. So you'll see something like the young man who killed the head of United Healthcare. People are going to reach their limits. And we've been told when you can't solve a problem, you get a gun, and whoever has the biggest gun is going to win. That is not how people in a civilized society operate. And I think that's going to be one of the sad parts about even this election, is that we're going to be throwing and slinging mud, and at the end of the day, we can't be civil to each other even past that. So the other thing I want to say is, like, I was part of a program at the St. Louis Artworks called When We Speak. And it was a gathering of, intergenerational gathering of women in spoken word. And so it was just so powerful. T-Spirit organized that along with some other cohorts. And it was just really a place that I think I needed to be on a Saturday afternoon, Saturday evening. So the one thing that happened at the end of the program that we weren't quite expecting, we got the news that our dear beloved sister Martha Jane West made her transition. And so that was anticlimactic, to say the least. But, you know, one thing I will say about Martha is she lived a full and joyful life. She was 90-something years old. I don't remember the exact, but she was 90-something years old. And most of us will say that have organizations, like, she was our longtime supporter, but it was a number of organizations that could say the same thing, because she supported anybody black that was doing something positive. And so, she's going to have her services in Tennessee this coming Saturday. And I did have to chuckle, because Saturday is the big hands-off mobilization. It's going to be a national mobilization in St. Louis, many of them around the region, and there's going to be a big one in D.C. And I said, the times that she gets laid to rest, she's going to be in the thrust of a national mobilization against, you know, this authoritarian regime. And that just makes perfect sense to me, the way that the universe lined that up. When she has her memorial service here in St. Louis, I will be the first or second to let you know about that. But, you know, her service in Tennessee is this coming Saturday, April 5th. One of the things I remember about Martha, she was definitely a historian, a griot. And I can remember one day I was talking about Vashon High School. And I said, Vashon, it seems like they're the stepchild of the St. Louis Public Schools, because they are always trying to see what's going on. I'm getting some feedback to say that you can't hear. I don't know what to do about that, but hell, I'm gonna keep talking and see what we can do, because I think it's probably on my end. So what I hope that helps some, but this is new and different doing the streaming, so we'll get it together. Somebody's already agreed to help me with that. But what I was talking to Martha about Vashon, and she worked near the Harrisville campus at the Hubert Wheeler School, and that was a school for special needs kids, and she worked there for a number of years. The front door, Harrisville used to be Vashon High School. Most folks don't know that. The front door is on the Laclede side. And most people would think that it would be on the Market side, where there's lots of traffic and you can see people coming in and out. But Martha said one of the reasons why that front door was put on the what we would consider the backside is because they didn't want white folks who were driving down Market to have to see black kids coming out of a school. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know, but I can halfway believe it, knowing how white folks in the city operate. Then what happens is, this is a nice building that the school was in, very nice. Lo and behold, they put them in an old factory over there on Bell. It's like, what? What are they doing to these kids? And then when they were going to build a school right there on Grand, folks thought that was going to be the new Vashon. No, it's the Sam Miller School. it's a magnet school, and so they built another school for Vashon down on Cass. So she was the one that sort of brought that to me about the front door business, and so she was full of stories, and so we are definitely going to miss her dearly. So one of the things that I think I want to talk about today is a few people know that we lost local control of the St. Louis Police Department last week. That was a 20-year struggle of folks, not just black folks in the city, but white folks and black folks who said we want control of our police department. St. Louis and Kansas City were the only two cities in the whole damn country that didn't have control of their police departments. Now, doesn't that seem a bit odd that you got two urban areas in a state like Missouri who don't have control of your department, and a police department at that? So, yeah, so this is where we are with that. And we are now trying to see what does that really mean. We set up the Office of Civilian Oversight. What's going to happen to that? We don't know yet. All that is to be determined. But what I do know is that local control of the St. Louis Police Department, along with the ability to have safe and accessible abortions, along with increase of the minimum wage plus paid sick days, those were three ballot initiatives that voters overwhelmingly supported. But yet here comes this Republican trifecta to say, no, we not having that anymore. So it ought to cause a bit of outrage for some and a lot for others if you were part of any of these initiatives to help get them on the ballot, to help get people out to vote for them, and to get it passed. And just in one fell swoop, this governor says, no, you won't have local control of your St. Louis Police Department. So, you know, you have to wonder, why is that? Why did that happen? And I can tell you from the very beginning, even when we had local control, there was constant obstacles and resistance by the St. Louis Police Department. So the St. Louis Police Association had wanted no parts of it and made that known. And so it was almost like they were stalling for this moment. And Michael Butler, who you heard on this show a few weeks ago when he was running for the mayor position in St. Louis, did an article in Bolt Magazine about local control. And this is where he and I agree, that it was the police association who really did not want to be under any kind of oversight, who really pushed their white friends in on the state level to overturn that. And I can't put it any other way that they did not want to have any accountability. I mean, we were getting to the point where there was some policies that had changed. There were some things that were moving in the right direction. And I think that's when they really accelerated their ability to pull out. And I don't want people to be too harsh on black police officers, because I can tell you that when we first started working for local control back in the 2000s, Eddie Simmons was head of the Black Police Officers Association, and that is called the Ethical Society of Police. He, without question, said, we're in, because we want to hold ourselves accountable. Him and the folks back then had no problem with supporting local control and even oversight. So what is happening now? And I would also say that Heather Taylor, who came after Eddie Simmons, also was for oversight. This is a sister who the police put in memos and said that if she ever was in distress to stand down. And this is one of their fellow police officers. So that's how toxic it is in that organization, in the St. Louis Police Department. So the folks who've lined up now under the current leadership all think that they're going to get something if they support local control. But I think about what happened with those folks that you would see traveling with Trump, and they literally, some of them were kissing his foot. I mean, literally. Hoping, I guess, that they were going to get a position in the cabinet. But you take a look at that cabinet. Do you see any of those Negroes in there? No. So all that humiliation they did on national TV was all for naught, because he didn't give them the thought of the day or the time of the day. And now they're history, except that they're going down on in social media forever for looking like, you know, buffoons. So, you know, we all have an opinion, and we all have a right to express that opinion, but they're going to probably come with some consequences. And I have to do that myself. There's times when I'm saying something, I know it's going to be controversial, I'm going to get some backlash, but if it needs to be said, then I have to figure out how to say it and how to educate people about what I'm saying and why I'm saying it. And so I think for me, both as a writer and an organizer that's trying to educate and empower our people, is not just throwing stuff out there like, this is what I think, this is what I believe. No, I want you to follow the money, connect the dots, and be a critical thinker. So, you know, that's what we have with local control. It's a law now, and we'll see what the aftermath is, but I'm one that says, let's see what we can do in spite of that law being passed. As we know from even the civil rights days, there were laws that were passed that weren't just laws. And Dr. Martin Luther King said, you know, we can't obey the unjust laws. We got to work to change those. And so that's definitely my viewpoint. And, you know, when I look at, for example, there were Democrats that voted for taking local control back. And so that's why I keep saying, don't be fooled by people's titles, their affiliation. Look at what they do. You know, Maya Angelou told us, when people do stuff, that's who they are. And you are to believe that. When they tell you who they are, believe that. So we have four Democrats in the Senate and the House who voted with the Republicans. And for the most part, it was down party lines, but there were, and I'm going to read them, because if you recognize them as your particular elected official, you might want to give them an email or a call. So in the House side, there was Representatives Boyko, Butts, Kimball, and Mackey. Those are Democrats that voted with the Republicans. So if you recognize one of them as yours, give them a shout. On the Senate side, the Democrats were Senator Beck, Senator Lewis, Senator McCreary, and Senator Nuremberg. So those people, I mean, you could say, for example, like, we would have lost the vote anyway, but you got to take a stand even when it's you know that you're in the minority, that you got to take a stand, because that's what history is going to judge us on. And we have to salute, you know, Senator Carla May and some of the other Democrats who fought so valiantly, even in the face of, you know, they knew it was rising opposition, but they still fought for us to the very end. And so that's the posture that we're going to have to assume in this particular climate that we're in. We can't just roll over. Even when it looks like we're going to lose, you got to fight to the finish. So local control, we had some collaborators with the Republicans that essentially betrayed us. And that's why, you know, this whole undying, unfounded, conditional support for the Democrats, we need to put that in check. The other thing that's going on is this the mayoral race, one of the things I remember Steve Roberts saying when they were announcing that they had lost local control, he made mention that he thought that the mayor, the vote that came out of the primary was because people, there was a lack of confidence in the mayor. I disagree with that. I mean, there's been low voter turnout for years in this city, and particularly on the north side. So this is not a new phenomenon. I think people are sick and tired of the foolishness in the electoral process, period. It had something to do with the mayor, but it had more to do with the fact that no matter what people think they're doing positive, there's these rollbacks, and then there's people on the side that are helping the rollbacks. And so people are saying, what's the point of voting? Now, I used to think that black elected officials didn't understand the importance of getting the vote out, because when I looked at some of how many votes some of them got to get in, it's like 500, 600. You know, your family reunion is bigger than that. So I realized after a while that these folks actually are part of the voter suppression, because they want their job. They want to keep that job. And instead of doing the right things to say, this is how I'm going to keep my job, I'm going to continue to do best by my ward, my district, and that's why the people are going to continue to support me. Not that I'm going to keep these cronies of folks who I do some favors for, and that's going to make sure that I stay in office. So I noted that, hey, when it comes down to people leaving the city, leaving your particular ward, that ought to mean something to you as a black alderperson. Like, how do you stabilize a community? Because those are voters that are leaving, and they're leaving in droves. So what is your response to that? So is you know, those are some of the things that I think about, and other people help me think about. But I have come to the conclusion that there are some black elected officials who are part of the voter suppression because they want to stay in office, and they want to stay in office for all the wrong reasons. Because I believe if you really do what you're supposed to do, the people are going to support you. And sometimes they give you a benefit of the doubt, even when you're not doing all that you're supposed to, because the other folks that are running against you, they know what they're about as that goes. Now, I remember when the Democratic Central Committee did the vote, and it came out that they were not going to support the incumbent, which was a break from tradition. I mean, the Democratic Central Committee always voted for the incumbent. So they picked this particular election to break that tradition. And so my phone just started blowing up. And one of the things people were saying, that was the reoccurring theme, was these folks come from wards that look like war zones. So how are they holding their alder people accountable? And you know, so it's like a sort of a contradiction when we put a criteria on somebody but don't put it on other people, because those are the people that we like. And so I just think that we want to be woke. And I know my friend Christian Blackman says we might have to give up the word woke because they've bastardized it. But no, that's a real word, and we should reclaim it. People need to be woke, stay woke, because that is how we see what's happening to us and why it's happening to us. So there are, I've been listening to y'all, and, you know, I talked to a lot of people everywhere, go to different events. I'm talking to people while I'm pumping gas. And one of the things that I kept hearing was about this curse. You know, in St. Louis, this mayor, black mayor, one-term curse. And I'm thinking, how are we believing in all this hocus pocus when an election of a mayor is a real thing? It is an important thing. So I wrote an article about one-term black mayors is not a curse. It's actually a calculated decision by the white power structure. So we need to to think about what we are saying and why and how it sounds. So I compared St. Louis, who's with Kansas City, who also have elected three black mayors. All of them got second terms. You hear what I'm saying? All of them got second terms. That city is prospering. They're almost at a 500,000 in population, where St. Louis is like about 300,000, and we are losing population every year. So what is the difference between those two scenarios? And let me just add, and you can read this on the St. Louis American website as well as their Facebook page. And I was told that within 18 hours, there were 25,000 views. And so I know people are concerned about this race and what it's doing to our community. But they also know that there is some manipulation going on and that we better be paying attention to why people say different things. So in Kansas City, the white population is the majority. In St. Louis, if you add a black vote with the the other people of color, then that is the majority. So white people are not in the majority here if you add all of the other nationalities. But yet this whole thing about a one term mayor, some of us have bought into that. You know, it sounds crazy, but you know, people find things to believe in and hang their hat on. But I know the reason that column resonated is because I've been talking with you all. And when I'm talking to a lot of people during an intense time like this, all those voices are in my head. So when I get ready to write, I just bang it out because you all are talking to me. And you saw your views in that article. So it's going to be, I think, more intense in this next week. But I just encourage people to, again, take the high road. I'm going to say who I support and I'm going to say why. And, because you support somebody, I'm not going to trash you. Now I am going to point out some things to you. For example, one of the things I, took offense to was when the Spencer camp put out a map of where donors were coming from, and they compared Tashara Jones's it was a national map of the U.S. Where her donations were coming from and where Spencer's were coming from, and hers were basically clustered in the region. But when you start looking at those were, big corporate dollars. And so I'm thinking, that's not a good thing. And then pointed out how many dots on the map Tashara Jones had across the country. Now, this is what struck me about that whole scenario, is that every day I get something from the Democratic Party, from some candidate that's running. They're not in St. Louis. Jamala, it's Cory Booker. Jamala, it's Elijah Manley. Jamala, it's Team AOC. Jamala, it's Alex Hawkins. I mean, I'm every day they come in. And sometimes I respond because there might be a close race. I remember giving to Warnock's campaign in Atlanta because it was a close race and, we needed him in there. So I'm one of the little people that, might give you $25 that is counted as the small donations. And so for all of a sudden for that to be a negative, that to me was just the wrong move to make. I don't know who advised that, but that was absolutely the wrong move because nowadays, people are appealing nationally, including her party, the Democratic Party, and is no way I can get out of this thing. Sometimes I've tried to unsubscribe. I just keep getting them. So, okay, it's because I know I've given to a candidate. Now I'm in the system as being a donor. And I don't mind that because I'm going to contribute to those folks who I think are going to make a difference. And we all have that right to do that. And so that to me was almost disingenuous, and I was kind of surprised that Kyra Spencer would do that, because to slap somebody on the hand because they're getting donations, small donations from all over the country, just did not seem an appropriate strategy to take. But, you know, we are going to have some tough times, and we're gonna throw some mud at folks. But I really do want us to concentrate on why we are using our vote, our voice, and our monies in ways that support our families and our communities. And and I'm seeing, for example, we've been talking about the Target boycott. They're losing money. We didn't include the Tesla folks in there, but, you know, it's people who have Teslas that are, boycotting, and those who were going to buy Teslas, I guess. That's not my league. But, you know, they're losing money. So yes, we have a right to say who we going to support monetarily, just like they do. Nelly played to a half-empty concert recently. And I think it's because, you know, he went up there to the White House playing for Trump. And people were saying, this is what I think about that. So, yeah, he had a right to do that. Of course he had a right to do that. But then people have a right to spend their money where they're going to spend it. And so I think, you know, we need to be thinking about these things and knowing that most of these positions that we take, whether it's around an election or not, people are paying attention. And so... So I don't know for Nelly what that means in terms of future concerts, but I know the last one, he barely had 500 people there, and I think the arena's, set 16,000. So that's a big loss of money. So when you talk about people who may be promoting him, they may see him as a liability now. So I think we want people to do the right thing. We want people... Right now, it's to me, okay, it's not even about doing the right thing. It really now is, this is a referendum on whether or not this country is going to devolve and deteriorate into some fascist state, some fascist police state, or are we going to rise up and say, stop looting the treasury, stop dismantling the government, stop destroying lives, and stop acting like we don't count, because we do. And so, we just headed for a showdown, y'all. We headed for a showdown because we have to say this is not what we're going to tolerate. Because once we start rolling over and this man keeps doing his executive orders, that's how he's been operating, just doing executive orders. We at a situation where some of us don't even know what to do about him, because we've never been here before. I mean, there are judges that say, okay, he's in contempt of court, but what do I do? You can't arrest a sitting president. So he knows that now from the last, run, that, what he can and cannot do. But there's being so reckless, y'all. And you saw the first government agencies that they shut down were the watchdogs. So we don't have anybody looking out for us, and then they coming after the CDC, the Health and Human Services. So those departments that really monitor, food and drug, like what's good for us and what probably we don't need to be. So we're going to be a sicker nation because of that. And, rising cost of health care, that's a calamity right there, because most folks are not going to be able to afford health care, and they won't have jobs that pay for that health care. So I just want you to think about what it means when they shut this stuff down and how it affects our lives right now and in the very near future. So the point is that we need to recognize that and really start organizing in ways that our lives depend on it, because they really do. The deportation of so-called immigrants, because what they're claiming is these folks are criminals. And so as was predicted, and I was one of the ones who predicted it, when they start rounding up, they're going to round up the wrong people, and they already have. But guess what they're saying? So what? So that's what I'm saying, y'all. We can't have a government that can't even not only do the right thing, but once they do the wrong thing, refuse to correct themselves. So, the people that are being deported wrongfully that are actually citizens of the U.S., and this fool is saying, so what? Again, it's setting this country up for some other stuff, and the tariffs are doing that too. People are getting more hostile toward the U.S., more anti-American. And so this is when you see terrorism rise, both internally and externally. And so we are going to be caught between a rock and a hard place, and I don't think we want to be there. It's not a good place to be, but, you know, when you got people really, I can't think of any word but looting, and we're watching them loot. That's why we're getting angry. It's like, well, you just did what with our money? All of these are tax dollars that are being seized. And guess what? Have you ever heard one of them say, with all of this saving of money, where that money is going to go? Because generally you say, even for us that we're talking about defunding the police, we were saying, hey, we think we should look at the budget and then see if there's some line items that we could, you know, do housing. You can do employment training. You know, it's going to go somewhere else to improve the society, to improve the lives and the quality of lives in citizens. So the money that's being saved, let me tell y'all, the public coffers is the last big pot of money to be seized. And that's what they're doing. Even for local governments, for school boards, there are millions, sometimes billions at stake. So there's these big fat budgets that people want to get their claws on so that they can do whatever. So even for the local school board election, lots of money had come in from the charter school people to run candidates. Again, white corporate money. And if they get a chance to get the majority on the school board, you could say goodbye to public schools. It will look like New Orleans charter school system. So, and we've got a ton of information and data that says the charter schools don't do better than the public schools. So that false narrative we need to just crush when and every time we can. So we're going to start to see all of this money. It's going to be all about the money, y'all. That's being taken and that's coming in. So, you know, just like we saw a ton of money coming in for Wesley Bell's campaign. We can't compete with that kind of money. We can't. You know, I don't have a million to plop down on even a candidate that I like. In Wisconsin, the judicial election, and I sure meant to look at those results, but Elon Musk dropped $20 million in that race. Why? Because he's got a case coming up before the Wisconsin Supreme Court. His Tesla lawsuit. So he can throw down that kind of money. What we have to do as working people who don't have that kind of disposable income is to be smart about who we're voting for, but also be better organized. I've seen too many examples of how money came in, but the people still were victorious because they were organized and they came out. And so that's what we're going to have to do going forward. We, you know, people that are disgusted with the system, we have to show them about how when you don't stand up, you give these people a pass. And I'm not going to be sitting around suffering silently, y'all. And so I'm hoping that y'all will join the army of the willing and able to stop the menace that's coming our way, because anything blue is going to be a target. So St. Louis and Kansas City now are basically the blue spots in the state of Missouri. And so, you know, when you even look at, for example, what Trump did to the governor of California during the fires. I mean, here, these fires are ravaging homes and communities. And this man saying, if you don't support me, I'm not going to, you know, give you any federal dollars to fight these fires. That's how sick this stuff has gotten. And we cannot, absolutely cannot have a dictator like that sitting on the throne and causing the kind of havoc that he's causing. And we just cannot sit idly by and complain and wring our hands. We gotta get organized, y'all. And when we had Zaki Baruti on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he talked about, like, join an organization. And if you can't join an organization, at least fund an organization. Send them some money so they can keep doing the work that they do. And we know that we can't save everybody. Harriet Tubman told us that. She said, I could have saved more, but they didn't want to be free. So it's not about saving everybody. It's not about uniting everybody, because that's a fantasy. But what we do have to do is get a critical mass of people who understand what's at stake, what they will have to do individually as well as collectively. That's what's going to save us. That's all this other stuff about, you know, ghosts going around, you know, with messing with the election of black mayors, that kind of stuff is, you know, we need to bury that. The reason that we don't have black elective officials, mayors, that never get a second term is because from day one, they did like they did President Obama. In that basement of the house, they said, we saying no to everything he does. And in spite of that, he tried to do a few things, but it was hard. It was hard. And so what you see when there's a black elected official, and I can't say that there's been too many black elected officials that go more than a term, even when they get a second term, because the stress and the obstacles are so great that you find yourself defending more than you are moving your agenda, and it's just too much. But I can't, and the reason that we have to be adamant about supporting our black elected officials is because that's a hard job. And I know I don't want it. I wouldn't want to be a mayor. I can sit on the sidelines and tell you what you should be doing. Because I'm out here and I'm listening to people. And but I certainly wouldn't want the job. So when somebody steps up to say, I want to be a state rep, I want to be a school board member, you know, we can't just elect them and then let them hang and flap in the wind when the going gets rough. We have to be there with them and support them. And when people make missteps, we all say, okay, that was not a good thing that you said or did. Let's see how we can get this back on track. There's a bunch of us that are just fair weather friends. And I just, you know, stay away from me, because I, you know, I'm a fall. I'm human. I'm going to make some mistakes. If I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to make some mistakes. If you think that's the most horrible thing in the world, okay. But every time the going gets tough, we can't abandon the folks who've been out here fighting for us, y'all. And I see too much of that, and I know that's going to affect other folks who think about running. They're going to think about, well, hell, such and such didn't get any support. They left them hanging in the wind. That's not what we want to do. We do want to be woke. One of the things I remember Judge Mason saying to me, he said, Jamala, y'all need to think about doing something with that Dred Scott decision, getting it back on so that you can overturn it or whatever it is, neutralize it. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, Judge Mason, okay. But really, I started to think about that more when the Trump administration used the Alien Enemies Act of 1798 to start these deportations. The alien, like somebody came from another planet. Alien enemies of 1978, y'all. 1978, that's the year that this was passed. They went back and started using that law. So I'm thinking, Judge Mason, you might have a point here, and maybe it might be too late because, you know, some of these courts are already stacked with, you know, Trumpites and MAGites. But, yeah, it does make you think, like, what else are they going to go back and get, particularly for folks of color? Because, you know, our ability to be human is codified in the law. So if they repeal that law, we're going to be slaves again. So I just want y'all to think about that. That's why paying attention to the systems of oppression and who's at the helm is going to be crucial for us going forward. Crucial. So we can't be too tired, too busy. We got to carve out some time to pay attention and to see where we fit in. And it's someplace for you. I guarantee you that. It's someplace for you, even if it's just you writing to your congresspeople every week saying, hey, good job. And I'm going to say, write when they do something good, because they need to still hear from you, not only when they do wrong. So Carla May, if Carla May is your senator, send her a nice little note, little email saying, thank you for standing for us, with us, around local control of the police, because she did a hell of a job. And Cory Booker is up there on the national level. He's been there for over 24 hours talking. And so this is what we have to do. We have to use whatever tactics we have at hand, y'all, to slow or stop the machine that's getting ready to run over us. And we gotta, like I said, carve some time. We gotta use our money differently, and we got to act like we are in under siege, because we actually are. Wow, there is so much going on, and I know for a lot of people, working people, they just don't have the time for the foolishness. They don't have time to read. So I try to be as informative and inspiring as I can, because this is not going to be fun going forward. But I do want people to concentrate on April 8th. Find out as much, you know, there's been a number of candidate forums. Some people a little bit confused about all the people running for school board. It's 12 people running for 3 seats. Yeah, it's you have to know who they are, because a lot of them, again, are, you know, funded by Opportunity Trust, which is the charter school people. So we got to be smart. We got to be woke. We got to. And if you don't understand something, find somebody who can explain it to you. That's what I do. And that's how I end up writing certain things, because certain things I don't understand. I'm like, I'm going to go to such and such. She probably understands this better than I do. And then I have to put it in lay terms so that folks who listen to me or read my columns can understand it. Because when you talk about market economy and capitalist economy and all of that, I know basically what inflation is. I know the prices go up, and what's going to happen for us in this country is there's going to be higher prices, which means we won't have as much disposable income, and I'm talking about consumers. So then we're not going to be going out to eat. We're not going to be going to the barbershop. We're going to be trying to do our own hair. So those people are going to feel the brunt too. It's a domino effect. And so you'll start to see in our communities more small businesses shuttering. Even churches are shuttering, you know, because you got to have people in there paying tithes, you know, to keep the church going. So when people don't have that money and they got to use it for medicine, for food, for rent, the people that we normally would support in our communities, we won't be able to do that. We just won't. So I just want people to think about it. It sounds really grim, but we also have been through this before. Black folks have. You know, we survived the Depression. We just used to sharing and not having a whole lot. And so, but there's some of us who now have got a lot, and so we're going to be probably stressed out like some of the white folks who were jumping off of buildings in during the Depression because they weren't used to that. We're used to buckling up. You know, when I say buckling up, I mean, you know, putting an extra hole in our belts because we know we're not going to have the big fat meals we used to have. But we got to become a community of support, a community of action, and a community of care. We can't be turning on each other because somebody somewhere is manipulating the narrative that has us looking at each other like we're the enemy, and then we're fighting each other, and they're getting off scot clean. Or as my favorite poet says, Whitey's gonna be on the moon, and y'all know which one I'm talking about. Elon Musk, he's gonna they destroying the planet here, both environmentally, government agencies, everything is being destroyed right in front of our very eyes. And so we gotta wake up, y'all. So here's what's going on this weekend so that we know we got something to do. And some of this is on my website, JamalaRogers.com. There's going to be a groundbreaking for U.S. colored troops, the Buffalo Soldiers. So that sounds interesting, y'all, because they pretty much erasing all the black faces in the military. That's what your president is doing. The Universal African People's Organization is having their anniversary. That's also on my website. But the big thing is hands off, hands off. That is happening April 5th. That's also on the website. That is a national mobilization. And so they are going on all over St. Louis. I saw some in Baldwin, some in St. Charles County. There's going to be something happen at Eager and Brentwood right there at the, that's not the Galleria, that's the Brentwood Promenade, I think. But people are saying enough is enough. And so we need to make sure that we are on the right side of this, that we're doing all that we possibly can to not just stem the tide, but turn the tide. We're going down, getting ready to go off a cliff, y'all. And I'm going to be fighting and all the way, and I'm hoping you all will be with me in that fight. But, yeah, this is the America that we don't know. But we are going to get to know real personal in the next upcoming months and possibly years. And what's happening now, if we don't stop it, it will literally take us generations to undo the damage, the destruction that's been done. And, you know, we'll have to count ourselves as co-conspirators instead of, you know, we were warriors against this outright, you know, assault on our democracy. And so, you know, we got a role to play. We just need to accept it. This is Jamala Rogers, your host of Voices from the Battlefield, and I will see you on the battlefield. We don't need a fuss and fight.